Hello. Thank you very much for disturbing the rosé and the sandwiches and all those nice things that were happening outside. We tore ourselves away from it as well. My name is Matthew Patten. I'm the Chief Executive of the Mayor's Fund for London. And before I introduce our illustrious panel, I just wanted to just kind of say two or three comments about what we wanted to cover in terms of the next half an hour or so. We're really interested in talent in London and young people. That's what the Mayor's Fund for London is for, social mobility. And we're really struck by the conversation that's happening around the construction, the real estate, the development industry, which is about talent, depending on which report you read, you know, whether it's the Mark Farmer report talking about as many as 300,000 to 400,000 people needed to come into the industry in terms of the shortfall. It was a much more doomsday report that came out more recently, talking about a really frightening number of hundreds of thousands of people needing to be recruited for the sector going forwards. We think that's a real challenge in London. And what we wanted to do was we wanted to look at that particular issue, which some commentators have called the biggest crisis in the sector as a whole, much bigger than issues to do with planning, much bigger than to do with issues to do with the acquisition of land. But we wanted to look at what other industries and other sectors were doing about it. So I'm really pleased to introduce my three guests today. Anthony Impey is the chief executive of a tech business called Optimity. He also created and is chair of an organization called 50,000 Homes, which I'm sure he'll reflect on in a moment. Sinead Cameron is somebody who, in the most extraordinary way, has gone from her kind of education and background to university and struggled to find a job, but has now found a job at Teach First. And we thought it would be interesting to hear about things from a younger person's point of view in terms of dealing with some of the issues involved. And my far left, Ollie Raman, works for the Mayor's Fund, and he's our head of employability. And we run a number of programs, Ollie runs a number of programs, which are absolutely about trying to match young Londoners with opportunities. And one of the things I would comment on that, I'm going to start with you, Ollie, is how few of those actually end up either in the construction industry or in the white-collar end of the construction industry as it used to be seen as in terms of architects and planners and things like that. Is that fair?
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. What we've seen is that young people are looking at career pathways that they found out about at school and university rather than looking outside of those prospects. So, you know, we find a lot of young people who have done a degree in a certain subject and that's the career that they want to pursue, but they didn't receive the right careers information in the onset to be able to make those decisions at such an early stage. So there is this thing about young people are now, you know, they have historically not looked at these various sort of sectors that are not considered a traditional route way. But now what we've seen for the last couple of years is that young people are more open to look beyond where their academic background is, and they're instead looking at other career opportunities where they can see progression. And I think that presents a real good opportunity for the sector to tap into talent in London, where you'll find young people who are more and more welcoming to other industries.
Why don't they at the moment?
In terms of the young people?
Yes. So, sorry, let's just put some context on that. There are over 4 million young people who live in London. There are 700,000 of those young people who we would regard as living in poverty and who therefore are really great examples of young people who there's a tremendous opportunity to help in terms of from a social mobility point of view, who would be unaware. In terms of NEETs, we talk about 100,000 people, young people in London who are not in education training. So we're not talking about small numbers. We're talking about really quite large numbers. At a time when we're starting to deal with Brexit or not, who knows what's going to happen over the next week, but nevertheless, where there's big questions about what's going to happen to people who are coming into jobs from overseas. So there's, you know, this is a real gulf. So I want to know is why are young people not looking at this space? I mean, why are young people looking to go and work in Primark and Nando's?
Yeah.
because that is the reality, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And it's to do with, for us, what we've seen over the last year is to do with access. So looking at those opportunities, is it something where they see a career routeway? Is that progression routeway available to them? And if they see that it's something that's unattainable, they tend not to look at those opportunities. The other thing is around, just touching on access again, is where these opportunities are advertised. So you'll find that young people are looking on various jobs boards, and they're looking to see how their current set of skills matches those opportunities. So you look at, for example, when the adverts themselves, they have the language that it's written in, it doesn't really appeal to young people from what we've seen. And what the work that we've been doing at Young London Working here at the Mayor's Fund is sort of trying to open the eyes of young people to see that actually some of these job descriptions might be written in some parts in jargon, but we break that down into sort of easy accessible language that young people then can understand how they can transfer their current skills to those opportunities.
Okay. So from your point of view, Sinead, you've just recently gone into Work for Teach First in the events side. So why are you not working in real estate or in the construction industry?
I would say lack of knowledge. From my perspective, yeah, I've never really been told about it, about the different roles that can be involved in that industry. I think young people need that career guidance. And, yeah, to come into schools and talk to us about what's going on, and that, yeah, you don't have to leave school and either go to university or work in retail. There are other opportunities out there. I know that I wanted to study events management, so in my mind, I had kind of tunnel vision, and that was the goal. But, yeah, if I knew about different options, then I might have explored some of them.
Okay. And what about from your point of view? So Anthony's been very involved in a very similar issue, I think, in the tech industry, London's tech industry, digital industry. What parallels do you see in that, if any, Anthony?
Well, I think it's very interesting. I speak to lots of businesses across different sectors, and I'm yet to find a single sector that's represented in London that isn't struggling with finding amazing people. And I think it's a real problem for anybody who is employing people at the moment, particularly when there's such an amazing pool of young people available on our doorstep. And Sinead and I were chatting before we kicked off this afternoon. And Sinead is utterly employable, and yet for a long time was unemployed before she got her job at Teach First. And I think that actually employers have got a big role to play in reaching out into the local communities in which they operate and finding talented young people and recruiting people like Sinead, because that's the thing that drives competitive advantage. We've got a huge problem in the tech sector. We currently employ about 1.6 million people in the tech sector. The rate of job growth is twice the rate of the national average. There's a huge requirement for skills and talent within the sector. And we need to recruit people. We need to recruit people from the new generation of technical natives who understand technology better than any generation before them. And yet, as a sector, we just cannot access those people. And we've worked with the Mayor's Fund for London to actually start building those bridges into the local communities in which we operate in order to get access to that talent.
But I went to a tech conference the other day. In fact, it was a launch of somewhere called Rocket Space, which was an incredibly smart and glamorous and pristine environment for accelerator funds for small digital businesses. And there were two things that really stood out to me. One was the incredible lack of diversity in the room. I mean, it was full of brilliant and bright people, but they clearly all went to the same college and came from the same background. And without wishing to be dismissive in any way, when I kind of gazed across lunch today, I was also struck by a similar sense of lack of diversity. And I do think that is a challenge or a question in terms of attracting people into an organisation or into an industry. And the second thing was, I was struck, because I asked a question about young people, obviously, and the answer was, well, what we need is the very best talent. We don't care where it comes from, and frankly, we'll hire from anywhere we can, and 9 times out of 10, that's overseas. So it's a bit like being a football manager, you know. Do I invest in my own talent or shall I just go and buy it in? Is that true?
Well, I think on the second point, a lot of employers would say, actually, just give me talented people and I can train them and develop them into the people that I need to be, other than doctors. Doctors need to have a university education. I don't advocate doctors not getting degrees. Doctors and lawyers.
It's a very good panel. Very wise.
So I think businesses generally accept that. They will, if they find great talent, they will recruit great talent. And I think tech is, in particular, good at absorbing that unqualified talent and giving it qualifications. I think the issue with diversity is much more difficult. And I certainly would never advocate quotas, because I think that is that just encourages the same behaviour that a diverse workforce you're trying to avoid. But I think with diversity, it's much more around the networks that you recruit from. And so when you're starting a business, there is always that tendency to recruit the people you know, because you know them and they're safe people to work with, because you've maybe worked with them before in the past or you've studied with them. But I think when you start growing an organization, it's really important to start creating new networks and working with new networks of people. And it's that.
Okay.
It's that process.
So what's your network? What was your network like a year or two ago? In the way that Anthony's talking about, in terms of contacts, in terms of things like work experience, in terms of all those sorts of things?
I would say my network was very small, just the places that I had worked at, and kind of friends and family.
So what was your family background like? I mean, it's none of our business, but...
none of my parents have been to uni. My mum... she was working, but she's now caring for one of my younger sisters. So in terms of network and me getting into work, I didn't have any contacts in the industry that I wanted to go into.
So in terms of everybody in the audience, when you think about things like work experience and stuff like that, in terms of your own organisations, I'm interested to know how do... you go about that? Is that something that comes in a structured way, or is that based on people's networks and things like that? I don't know, does anybody have any experience that? You'll have to shout. I don't know if there's a microphone or what is in the room, but, oh, no, there is. Thank you, Jess.
Thank you. Hello, my name's Rachel Miller. I'm from Grosvenor. We have an internship program which is very structured and quite competitive to get onto. So in that sense, anybody is welcome and it's open to anyone. However, there is also kind of some informal work experience that goes on. So someone's son or daughter may come in for a week or so. It's not the same as going on the internship scheme, but obviously when you see it on a CV, it probably does still help.
Okay. And in terms of the scheme, the formal side of the scheme that you run, how do people find out about that?
I guess we do get a number of applicants from, I suppose, the usual places, so Reading University, from Oxbridge. I came into Grosvenor that way 10 years ago, and I found out about it because Grosvenor came and did a presentation at my college in Cambridge, so it's kind of classic way of getting onto an internship. Having said that, there are quite sort of overseas applicants too, so I'm not clear on how they find out about it. Potentially through the website.
Okay. So I'm not trying to put you in any difficult position about this, but so has Grosvenor ever gone and made a presentation for internships in Tower Hamlets?
I have to say I don't know the answer to that. I know we've got a programme at the moment that's just kicking off, which is all about diversity, so I anticipate it's going to become a much greater priority for the company, which I think is quite right and something that we should be looking at. Not just for recruitment, but at all levels of the business. I don't know if it's something that we've done so far or not.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. And then is anybody else in terms of experience of internship? So there's somebody at the back, Jess. Thank you.
Hi, it's Simon Bacon from Argent Related.
Hi, Simon.
So we're quite a small organisation, but actually... our internship is very, very informal. So we have probably, I don't think we advertise internships as such, but we have more people actually sending us CVs and requesting than we could ever actually support. But I think I probably receive an email every 6 or 7 weeks from someone in our organization saying, hey, there's a new young person that's really interested in getting into real estate. They've come from a background of geography, or they've come from a legal background. Can you spare 2 weeks, 3 weeks of helping them learn about it? I think it works really well, but it's a really small kind of piece of the pie, to be honest.
Yes. I think one of the questions, given the scale of the challenge, as I say, there's not an employment gap, there's an employment gulf, I think was one of the quotes from a commentator about this issue for the sector as a whole. Is it so large that you can easily find yourself thinking there's nothing we can do about this? You know, this is too big for any one organisation to deal with, which I think is true. But then again, if you look at the number of organisations, again, I'm very struck by the work that you've done in the tech industry, which is full of very small organisations, as well as, you know, the Googles and people like that. But if everybody does a bit, it's amazing what a difference that makes. But it needs to be structured.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I think the thing that's often overlooked with work experience or internships is the process of socialisation to work. Because actually, as a young person, I'd be interested what you think, Sinead, about this. But as a young person, it's quite easy to go through the education system and actually not really have any meaningful work experience, whether you leave school at 18 or you leave university at 21, 22. And I think that piece, the need to socialise young people into the workplace can go a long way to fix this gulf that you describe. And I think that's really, really important, because what I often see is a young person will struggle to find a job, they'll get a job, and then they will fly. Their career will absolutely take off. And it's just very often they have this gap at the beginning of their career because they just don't understand the dynamics of the workplace and how the workplace works. And so I think it's very, very important that whether it's internships or work experience, it really, really focuses on helping young people understand the nature of work and understand that process of working with peers, with people that are older than you, that aren't your teachers and your parents, how a modern organisation works, where actually very often you have to be self-motivated and you have to find things to do, you won't just be told what to do, and all those things I think is really easy to take for granted. And yet for a young person, ambitious young people that coming out of our education system just don't know how to plug into that. And I think that's the thing that's missing.
I'm going to come on to you, back to you in a moment, Shade. I just want to change the subject a little bit though. I want to talk about careers advice. I was talking to somebody the other day and we both ended up agreeing that there's no such thing as a golden age of careers advice. We shared horror stories about what we had been advised to do, I think by the junior PE teacher or something like that at school who was responsible for it. And again, I just wondered, how many people here have actively been involved in careers advice within a school? Anybody gone into a school and been part of that kind of program? Okay, so Grosvenor and Argent both have, but nobody else has. Because there is a lot of conversation happening around the quality of careers advice at the moment in terms of London. Sinead, what careers advice did you have at school?
I don't recall having any careers advice. It was kind of, you just choose your own path.
Is that really true? We haven't prepped or anything. Did nobody at any stage sit down with you and say, so what do you think you'd like to do?
I don't remember, no. I don't remember getting any careers advice, no.
Okay. The person I had the conversation with is one of our trustees, Melanie Grant, who is the deputy editor now of The Economist 1896 luxury magazine. And we were having a cup of coffee the other day and we were talking about this issue, and she said she can still remember the conversation she had with her careers advisor, who said to her, there's no point you thinking about anything other than potentially being an assistant baker. It was so demoralising, she said, and she said from that moment on I knew that whatever happened in the past, things were going to have to change. So, Ollie, I wanted to just talk about, in terms of an industry and industry-wide problems, there is a question about the perception of the industry and how do you change perceptions. And people are starting to talk about careers advice as one way of changing perceptions about what's available.
Work experience is one of the key ways that the industries can change perceptions of young people. The other way is also working with parents, because that's something that we don't talk about a lot when we talk about careers advice. So parents have such a huge influence on young people's lives at an early stage. And when people hold careers fairs, what we're seeing that works is where careers fairs are held with both students and parents attending them to get parents involved in that process. And again, also working with teachers, providing strategic advice to schools as well about the types of industries that are out there. So you'll find that lots of businesses in sort of growth sectors like tech are now getting involved with schools, but there are industries like the real estate industry from what we can see with our work in schools, they haven't been involved with schools yet. So again, that scenario where getting involved in schools, working on the careers advice plans for schools, and we're doing that through one of our projects, the Enterprise Advisor Project, which gets business leaders involved in developing the strategic careers advice for schools and sixth forms in London.
Okay. So again, this question of a kind of perception of awareness, we were talking earlier, weren't you? A young person needs to be aware of the opportunities, but then there needs to be a kind of a perception or a sense of appeal for that. I was trying to think of some good examples where that has happened in other sectors. I mean, how good are Google in terms of going into schools and Matt Britton saying, consider a career in this space?
I think some companies in some sectors do great jobs reaching out to schools. A really good example is UBS, and they have their own school in Hackney where they're really, really invested in the education of young people and creating opportunities. But I think in general, it's industry participation is reasonably bad. But just to defend all the employers in the room, I don't think it's our fault. I think it's really, as an employer, I'm really invested in this thing, much more than my investors would be comfortable with, I'll be honest.
So clearly it's not your fault.
But I think it's really difficult for an employer to get into a school and talk in a school. Unless you have an existing relationship with the school, it's really, really difficult. And so you just, we've all got day jobs to do. And when we're trying to do this extra stuff, and actually it's very difficult to get into the school, it just becomes too difficult. And so I do think it's a two-way problem. I don't think it's fair to just say employers need to do more, because actually lots of employers are engaged in this. Lots of employers, outside of the need for talent, lots of employers want to do things in their local schools or give back to their local communities. And I just think sometimes it's really, really difficult. And so I think there's got to be, I think both the education system, the education needs to move as much, if not more, than employers.
Okay. So again, just as a question then, again, from an industry point of view, wherever you might sit in the industry, is there an industry initiative, a structure, which is encouraging organisations?
I'll jump in again plug the ULI initiative, which is called Urban Plan. I don't know if anyone else is aware of it.
Is anybody else aware of it?
It's really
so only two people. three people in the room.
It's really excellent. So the idea is that they have a very high-quality program, go into different schools, and they run this program with volunteers from the industry. And it puts the kids, I think it's for 11 and 12-year-olds, and it puts them in the position of being the developer and kind of giving them different roles within the property industry. And they kind of have to master plan a development, and then the volunteers from the industry kind of judge it, and it's a competition. And it's a really great program, so I think that's a great way of getting into schools if anyone wants to do that and doesn't already know about it.
Okay, that's really good to know. And in terms of where that happens, sorry, you've lost the microphone. Is that across the country, or is that just in London, or is it regional?
I believe it's across the UK.
Okay, very good. Sinead, were you aware of that?
No.
Okay. I just want to kind of wrap up. I don't know if anybody has any particular questions or not. But I kind of then wanted to just move the agenda just another step slightly backwards towards kind of what I would kind of call local authorities and government and all those things. So we sit in the middle of City Hall, and there's been a lot of City Hall people here for the last 2 days talking about policy and all those sorts of things. And I'm just wondering, from a kind of policy point of view, what would make a difference in this space? So, again, one of the things that we spoke about a little earlier was the link between young people and housing, for example, as an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think from an employer's perspective, it's very often overlooked as an issue, the cost of living in London. And yet, I think for a lot of young people, it's becoming a major barrier to being able to live and work in this city.
Yeah.
And as Matthew said, I am part of a campaign called 50,000 Homes, which is about creating more homes in Londoners so that people who work here can live here as well. And I think that's very, very important. It's a very important issue to address.
So, again, it's a personal question which you don't have to answer, but where do you live?
I live in the borough of Lewisham.
Okay, and do you live at home, or do you live with friends, or do you have your own house?
No, I'm currently living at home.
Okay, yeah. And what is the prospect for you in terms of not living at home?
to be honest, it hasn't really been something that I could think about because of my finance situation. I would have to save up a lot of money before I could move out.
Okay. I wonder, personally, whether there is a link between employment in a sector and an issue, which is such a major issue for young people. I think if you can pull those two together, that would be quite an interesting thing to do. All right. And again, from your point of view, Ollie, in terms of recruiting more generally, this issue of kind of housing and location and things like that.
So just touching up on the work experience as well, what we find is that a lot of young people are offered work experience that's unpaid, and that restricts a lot of young people who are having to pay rent from moving into a work placement for a short period of time, that's because you know they
can't afford it.
Yeah, it's just not affordable for them to make those to move on.
All right, I think that is a really big, significant issue. Unpaid work experience for lots of young people is a real bar to actually taking advantage of it because they just can't afford it and they don't have somebody to pay for it for them.
I mean, when we are recruiting, when we put a Nando's opportunity with a work experience opportunity that could potentially lead on to a full-time opportunity, what we find is people apply for Nando's because they know that they're going to get that job, that it's going to provide them a salary to keep them going. Whereas the work experience opportunity, even though it might lead on to a really highly successful career, it's just something that they can't afford to go into at any point.
All right. Okay. I'm very mindful that we've done our half hour at record time, and Jess is looking at me in a very scary way. Is there anything anybody has a burning question to ask at all? No? Okay. We're definitely going to stop and wrap it up there, if that's all right. I'd like to say thank you very much to Ollie, to Sinead, and to Anthony for coming, and thank you very much for your time as well.